Well, good morning. It is good to be with you. I thought maybe I'll just start a little bit about something that I've noticed that kind of is the lens on how I view Scripture, and that might give you a little bit of trust on who I am and where I'm coming from, and maybe make the message like this from some guy you don't know a bit more palatable. And so I view Scripture through a redemptive lens. I believe that the good news of Jesus is good news for everybody, or it's good news for nobody. And what Jesus has done and what he continues to do in his people and around the world is something that should be beneficial for everybody. And we have, in America, more than many other places in the world, we've come to this idea of individualism in Christianity, which is something that is tends to put some barriers as to what I think the gospel is actually trying to get at. And so things like, well, this is my relationship with God is between me and God, or my relationship, it's not for you to worry about, it's between me and him, or this is my personal prayer time. And there's nothing wrong with that sort of stuff, but when individualism is the only way that we actually view what God is doing throughout history in his people, in all people, that individualism kind of handicaps us to, I think, the beauty that's actually happening everywhere, regardless of financial income or status or political beliefs or where we live or any regionally. And so there's actually, when we, my wife just texted me, she said, looking good, Mr. Hollinsby. So that is, it's time for me to get going. It's been good being with you guys. No, there's actually a line that said, when we sang just now, it said, yeah, there's a day coming soon where the old will be made new. And then the other one that I love is people come together, strangers, neighbors, our blood is one. And so I think that what Jesus did at Calgary has actually leveled the playing field for all of us. And so we all approach the cross at the same trajectory, and we're all going to be on our knees one day confessing that Jesus is Lord, and that really levels things. So that's how I view Scripture, and that's kind of what's going to lead into what I'm going to talk about today, something I feel that God's really put on my heart. And it's been influenced by many others that I just really have come to trust lately and love. And so I hope this is beneficial for you. I remember when I was a kid, born in 83 in San Diego. My mom's here. She could tell you that I was a product of the 80s. And I remember thinking 2020 was going to be this unbelievable year. I mean, Marty McFly and hoverboards and the Jetsons. And then 2020 shows up and is like, I am unlike any year you've ever known before. And I'm going to teach you some things. And so I remember last Tuesday even waking up and in Tacoma, I was scrolling on Twitter and I saw that Memorial Day night, in the middle of the night, the winds were so bad. I don't know if you heard about this, but it actually, in Commencement Bay, started spinning a giant barge. And the barge knocked into one of the port cranes, those giant cranes. And that thing went flying down the Ruston Waterway and crashed into one of our local restaurants. And so I was like, at first I was shocked, and I'm like, no, this is 2020, right? Like, what else is next? You know, there goes the flying cars, because we're not going to get there. And 2020 for me is a year that's evoking tons of emotions. I mean, there's hope that, man, wherever we're at now, it's got to go uphill from here. But there's sadness, and there's expectations that things will get better. There's a sadness of us not gathering together, not able to have conversations very often without masks blocking us. And we see the injustice of the world we live in right now, but we're hopeful that things can only go up here. And I've learned a few things about teaching in my day, and I think it's best for me to start with a claim. And so that way it will let you know where I'm attempting to go. It'll keep me on track. It keeps you accountable to making sure that I'm not lying or getting off track. And so my claim for today is this. The Hebrew prophets envisioned a beautiful world that is incredibly good for everybody. And that the social unrest that we're experiencing today in our culture is actually a part of the path that leads us to this beautiful new world. To this world where we can come together because our blood is one. That's what we just sang about. Yeah, thanks. I really do believe that. And some people might, it's going to be really easy to go, oh, this is a political message, or oh, he had some agenda in that. And I'm going to ask you to step back from that and just go, let's hear what God has to say and see if we can actually pull something from this. And I understand that there's some instinctual norms at play right now. There's relational norms. Some of you don't know who I am or why I'm here or what I came to say. And that might cause like disruption or skepticism. And that is completely fine with me. And it's normal and expected. But my hope is that over our next 3.5 hours together, we're going to be able to... No, just kidding. Yeah, there goes... That's not happening. I'm going to give you about 25 minutes, right? Is to make this amazing text, one verse in the book of Isaiah, hopefully come alive to all of us. And that it'll be something that isn't just a really helpful, like, oh, that was a really fascinating take on that verse, that it actually like propels us into changing the way we live and the way we interact with people and people groups, and it also convicts us maybe of some underlying sin that's going on in our heart. I'm also aware that often people want a perfectly wrapped up message with like 3 points, and he told me what this verse means, and so I think I have an appreciation. I don't ever need to explore that. But I'm a believer that good talks lead to good talks. And so hopefully what I teach today will actually lead to maybe some conversations over lunch, just going like, wow, I've never really considered this. What do you think this means for us and our family and me and our community and our faith? And so my hope is that you're not going to walk away with 3 points, but hopefully you walk away with some sort of premise that might kind of shake the foundations of where you've been thinking for a while, because it has done the same for me. Okay, so 2020. I have accepted and I have grieved the institution of slavery on which this economic powerhouse called the United States was built. I grieve the anger and the frustration that has resulted in people destroying businesses and people destroying property. I get the emotions are high, and this is like flash paper right now, living in 2020 America. But I'm hopeful, because what I want to do today is to paint a new possible reality, a future where everybody thrives, and somehow show that this idea is something that is actually 2,500 plus years old. So today we're going to be camping out in the writings of Isaiah. This text, he's an Old Testament prophet. The text is about 2,400 years old right now, and while it comes from a Hebrew prophet writing to people in a very different time and a very different place, I have great hopes that it is actually fresh and new and forward-leaning and maybe even radical for us today. And it only takes a second to look at the prophet and notice that this feels ancient, because the Hebrew prophets were the original people who would stand up and speak honestly about corrupt power systems at play. There's power dynamics, and they would call it out. And so I hope to find something ancient that actually applies really, really well for today, maybe even more than we've ever considered. But before we get to Isaiah, I want to take a couple minutes and talk about the nature of prophets. So about 2,500 years ago, the kingdom of Judah came into power, this brand new powerhouse. And the capital city was Jerusalem. And this was the center, Jerusalem, of this kingdom. And while it was a city, it was also really symbolic of power, specifically a centralized approach to power. And so there was this central government, right, that did all of the ruling. It was a monarchy, and you had the ruling caste called aristocrats. And within this system, you actually had various forms of life all in this giant crock pot. You had military, and you had religion, and you had economics, and it was impossible to tell where the lines were drawn because they all started to blur together. But was something that was really, really apparent was that there were a small group of people within the system that acquired all of the power and all of the money. And these leaders would use their authority to secure even more power and even more wealth and take access away from those, the things that are very essential, like food and water. Does it sound a little bit familiar? Like I'm kind of starting to construct this argument for us here. And it wasn't long until the prophets rose up and they started calling out these injustices. In fact, history points to the Hebrew prophets being some of the very first like loud voices against social justice issues. The heart of social justice, things being made right, Eden being restored, came from the heart of the prophets. And there's a really great line from the book of Isaiah that says, "Daughter Zion is left like a shelter in a vineyard, like a hut in a field of melons." Is there any, by chance, this will be really, is there any melon farmers here today? I didn't think so. I mean, I was not going to have. So what is a hut in a field of melons? Well, it's actually a really wickedly smart and snarky rebuke from Isaiah to those people in power. What he's saying is that what you believe to be so strong and so secure, this system that you've set up that's going to catapult you to the top, it's a scam. You're throwing your efforts into something that is extremely frail and feeble, and it's an insubstantial system that's all going to fall apart at some point. It's a hut in a field of melons, and you're giving your life to this, and you're taking from those who are not benefiting from the system, and you're stepping over them to build your empire. But guess what? Joke's on you, because your empire is not going to last the way you think it's going to last. And it's not going to take much to topple that. And the thing I love about the prophets is that they have this audacity, because they're not afraid of authorities in the least. And the wild paradigm of all of this is that they're actually really normal folks. They're shipyard builders. They're fishermen. They're farmers. These are shepherds, just people that have no impressive LinkedIn resume, but they were standing up to those at the very top saying, keep building, because it's all going to fall apart. And they get ridiculed over and over and over and tortured, but they keep coming back for more. And it's like my son when he knows I'm going to win him in a fight, but he just keeps coming back because in his mind he's like, now I'm going to keep taking you on. And he's 8 and he's strong and he'll hurt me at times, but it's like that dog returning to vomit sort of thing. That's what the prophets were. It's like, you just keep going. We're going to keep harping on this until you guys get it. And prophets are the ones that must speak up and acknowledge where and how the system is broken. In fact, it's impossible for people that are prophets not to call out the very things that they think are broken. A good way of understanding the prophets was a couple weeks ago, my wife and I were watching this TV show called Hoarders. Have you seen it? Yeah, it's you can't look away. It's awesome. Like, it's incredible. And this particular episode was here in Marysville, and it was a husband and a wife, and they had a giant property with many cars and an RV. And the experts said they estimated 200. This blew my mind. 250 tons of garbage on their property. 250 tons of garbage. Yet, the hoarders in the show knew exactly where every single thing was and when it was out of place. And they went to go clean out the car, and they broke down because, well, in the backseat under that, I picked this up here, and that was tied into this memory, and that was tied into this memory. And so it got adjusted, and you go, you've got 250 tons of garbage, and you notice when one tiny thing is out of place. That's kind of how the prophets see the world. Or it's like somebody who has perfect pitch and goes to like an open mic, and the person's not playing right on key, and there's just that sense of something is off. That's how the prophets kind of operate. And they can't let the little things slide. They notice the injustices in absolutely everything. And Isaiah is one of the prophets who stood up to the corruptness of this system and the way that the leaders oppressed certain people in order to keep climbing up this ladder of power. And I just love these prophets because they may have such unadmirable jobs, and for the most part look like insignificant farmers and shepherds and fishermen, but they have absolutely no problem calling out the injustices that they see all around them. And that takes some bravery. Okay, and so that's the prophets. And now Isaiah 2, and this verse is fueled by the conception that the reality for Judah could look like something so much better. And I would like to think that this could also apply really well to us Americans in 2020. So Isaiah chapter 2, I think we got the verse here. Verse 4 says, he shall judge between the nations, God, shall judge between the nations and shall arbitrate for many peoples. They'll beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. And when the prophet is suggesting in this explosion of creative ingenuity of where humanity could end up, is this concept of we could rewrite this. Us people of God could actually rewrite this. And all this energy that's in this money that is spent on overtaking and conquering and war and combat and weapons and contrast and conquest, it's going to be repurposed, not to continue to make weapons for more swords, but for farming equipment. Now, the plow is such a fascinating tool because it's used for harvesting the very blessings that the earth freely gives, and it provides for all. It's not discriminatory in where things grow. Like, this food is good for everybody, regardless of status or position or title. And these tools are used to prepare the land so that the seeds could be taken by fertile soil and give us a harvest so that every single person is taken care of. And in Hebrew culture, the table, like even this table is a good memory of that, is actually treated like an altar because it's the place that you gather to accept the food that the earth provides to sustain you. And so each table is an altar. And when you come to the table, you're invited in a really palpable, practical way to engage in saying thank you. Engage in saying grace before your meal for the way that the earth has provided for you once again. For the way that God has set things up so that you can have a memory every time you sit at a table that God has not forgotten about you. That was the altar of the table in Hebrew culture. And now, for a great deal of people, the word justice actually takes on a bit of a legal definition. Something along the lines of like the bad guys getting served what was due to them, what was just to them. And while that is a facet of justice, one thing I want to propose is a new way of thinking about it, because I want you to think about justice the way the Hebrews did, and they thought about it through abundance. It's more than enough, because in a Hebrew context, justice also takes on this idea of everybody having what they need, and no one being hungry, and no one thirsty. There's not like people eating filet mignon over here while these people starve. A proper idea of justice is actually acknowledging that there is more than enough to go around. And we don't have to live in a scarcity mindset as Christians, because we see that the way that God has structured the world is that it's actually enough to provide overabundance for everybody if we steward it well. And so when the prophet shares his dreams about a possible whole new world, essentially what he's doing is calling out that there are intentional efforts that will allow some people to rise and to stay in power and keep others enslaved. But one day, those efforts are going to be used in the way that they were supposed to do in the first place, where everybody actually has enough. And that is a new vision. That's a holistic way of thinking. That is heaven. And if you spend much time in Isaiah, you're going to see that this is not the way the author always pans things out. It's not always the way he's writing. Because in fact, for a good bit of the first part of Isaiah, we see more of a searing critique of the way things currently are. And one thing that the prophets understood, one thing that they got, was that in order to live in this potential new beautiful world where the injustices are gone and the bad things are called out and everybody has enough, these prophets knew that you have to call out and name everything wrong that is currently happening in the world that we're living in. The only way to establish a better world was when we're honest with the current state of affairs. And now I think what we're seeing here in 2020 in America, I think we're actually in the middle of this substantial calling out. And if we actually have the eyes to see it and the courage to join it, we might actually see some significant growth towards a new and beautiful world, a future that is actually everybody having enough because we are all one blood. We're experiencing and witnessing people right now exposing the very things that are corrupt and broken around us. We're noticing how broken the system is, how deeply rooted the injustices are. We're recognizing an honest assessment of what is wrong in our current culture, and we must be impartial and clear on what it is that's wrong, and we have to call it out to get to this new world. That's what the prophets were calling us to. That's what they were doing. If we want to get there, we have to address all of this. And for the prophets, you're not going to be able to get to this new way of living without participating in this. This is a kingdom calling. Now, there's something going on a little bit earlier, and it comes from Isaiah, who's speaking on behalf of the divine, and he says, "My people, they don't understand." And so I just want to say that there is this concept of not understanding. We see that a significant piece right off the bat is about understanding. There's this, they don't get it. They're not curious. They don't really care. They don't see it. And we have to address that the system is broken and that we are being called as the people of God to stand up and give voice to those who don't have it. The divine says, on behalf of the prophet, to the people of Jerusalem, and might I be so bold to say that he is saying the same thing to us today. He's saying to the people of Jerusalem, I will not listen to you anymore because your hands are full of blood. Go and make yourselves clean. So we have to ask, why are their hands full of blood? And the answer is actually really simple. It's because they're deaf to the cries of everybody for whom the system is broken and does not work. My people have become so apathetic to the ones underneath the system who are being violated and triumphed on by such severe injustices. Christians, rise up, go wash your hands and be made clean. And I think that's a call for us today. And if their hands are full of blood for this reason, might ours be as well. And it's within this divine rebuke, actually, that we find an invitation from God saying, come, let us reason together. Or some translations will actually say, come, let us argue this out. There's this invitation to like spar with God a bit here. And so in this constant deconstruction of injustice, we're given this continual invitation. Step up, do things differently. He's saying you can stop acting this way. You can lose your apathy. You can open up your ears to the cries all around you. You can come back home. There's a home for you. And it gets even better because the prophets are greedy at times. So they don't even leave this just for people to step up to political power. They bring it home to the church because there's this line that says, when you appear before me, who has asked this of you? The trampling of my courts. Well, those are the temple courts, my friends. And in Israel, the temple was not just a center for a religious activity, but it got deeper. And this is where we're going to talk about systemic issues, because you had the temple as a center place for religious activities, but it was also in bed with the legal system of the day. And that was in bed with economics, which was in bed with politics and in bed with military, and that military defended the system. So as the prophets are actually stepping up and addressing the brokenness, they're calling out the system that is actually too blurred together. They all bleed into one another. Why? Because the injustice is systemic in nature. Okay? So there's this term called holism. And holism is what takes place when individual properties come together and they form something completely new. And that new thing contains elements that are not found within any of the individual properties. So, it's like, I was working at this church about a year ago, and I hope nobody's watching from that church, but there was this choir that we dealt with, and you had to audition to be in the choir, and you had your three or four singers that were the stars in the choir, but most of them were like, hey, you're not going to make, you're not Celine Dion, so just take a step into the wall of voices, and it might sound pretty. And that's actually what happened. You had a bunch of very average voices, but collectively, as one, they came together and made something that was just stunning. Something that was like, you heard them sing like the Hallelujah chorus, and it was unbelievable. And so that's what holism is, right? When these properties come together and form something that you never saw with them together that you would have seen individually. So that's a more positive definition. However, on the negative side, the same thing happens on the contrary. So it's not necessarily this wrong or this injustice. It's not this bribe or this element of corruption. But when you begin to throw these individual elements on top of each other, there's a monster that begins to develop that contains properties that you're not actually able to witness with one particular thing. You might look at this thing and go, oh, it's not that bad. But then you start going, well, this is tied in with this, and wait, this gets really complex. And so, as we hear the prophets dreaming of what could be, we often find that the sharpest critiques of what they're seeing as problems are typically in the same vicinity. And the prophets were always on the receiving end of terrible mistreatment because they were the ones that were often attacked for stepping up to those who stood to benefit from the system being the way that it is. And so systems work in a very specific way. There's always somebody who has interest in preserving a system. It's not hard to see that institutions will often flex to their own self-preservation. So, I mean, I've worked in even ministries, good-hearted people that had to protect the institution, and there's a trail of really hurt and broken people in the wake. And while the intent is doing well, the institution is often always looking out for the best to fit that institution, regardless of what collateral damage there might be. And while at times they will spend energy listening, the result is almost the suffocating of truth, because those truths are often a threat to the grip on power held by the ones that hold the keys to that specific institution. Okay? And this is gold, because when the people in power actually start opening their ears to listen to the prophets and to the injustices, well, that's where you have a revolution. And that's part of the hope that I'm seeing today, is the protests, the constant nagging of politician, the constant we should do better, we can do better. I think we're starting to see a revolution on our hands. And we notice from the prophets, and there are many, like Ezekiel, Hosea, Jeremiah, Joel, is that the very things that they were calling out, the corruption, the bribery, the closed ears to the cries of the poor, the no one fighting for the fatherless, they're actually a lot of the same common things that 2,500 years later in America we're actually hearing. Injustices haven't really changed. And they're calling out the systemic nature of injustice, the systemic nature of oppression. These things that get piled on top of each other, and it's going to start taking a while to unravel. Because when you start pulling on one thread, you realize that that one's connected to this one. And you pull on that, and that one's connected here. That's what systemic is. We're all tied together too closely. So I heard this spoke the other day and thought it was such a helpful way of understanding this systemic conversation, because I thought I knew what systemic racism, systemic injustice, systemic power dynamics was. I thought I knew what that actually was. I heard this the other day, and I'm going to read you some stats and just stick with me, and I think it might make it a little bit clearer. The United States is the largest arms dealer in the history of humanity. 36% of all exported arms weaponry comes from the United States. The U.S. is between 4 and 5% of the world's total population, but is responsible for 59% of total sales of weaponry. The top 100 companies that make weapons bring in about $420 billion a year. The top 5 money-making weapon companies in the world are American. Since 2002, there's been a 47% increase in money made off the sales of weapons. In 2017 alone, the United States sold Saudi Arabia 59,000 bombs in 1 year. In case you didn't know, Saudi Arabia and Yemen, they've been going at it for years. And experts suggest that the human rights atrocities right now in Yemen at the hands of the Saudi Arabians are some of the worst rights violations in the history of humanity. And yet, the U.S. sold Saudi Arabia 73% of the weapons used for these violations. Now, if I went on to tell you that this very small country in world population, 4 to 5%, was also the country that completely monopolized the market for weapons, and that a significant number of human atrocities across the globe were done by using these weapons, it probably wouldn't shock you. And then, if I went on to say that this country. Is building millionaires and billionaires via the profits of these sales, that probably wouldn't shock you as well. And if I told you that 40%+ of the personal weapons in the world are owned by the 4% of people living in America, you get what I'm saying? It's all tied together. And how about this country having roughly 120 handguns per 100 people? Oh, and what if I was to tell you this country also has far more mass shootings than any other country on the planet? That probably wouldn't surprise you, right? And if I went on to say that this country also has awful police brutality, would you be surprised? Like, do you see how this is all connected? And when you pull this string, it actually tugs on this one over here. And that is what we're starting to realize, I think, and wake up to see, is people calling out, the system is broken. It doesn't work for everybody. There's the rich getting richer, the wealthy keep rising to power as we keep certain people oppressed under this system. And we continue to build our wealth and our prosperity off the backs of those who the system doesn't work for. These systems are so much deeper and further than anyone could have ever realized. And so that's what leads us back to the prophets. Do you long for a better world? Not just for yourself or for your immediate family, but for everybody. Well, if so, then we must call out the things that are wrong with this world. And that is going to be a long and painful process. And it's going to convict us, and it's going to shake us up, and it's going to cause us to be really uncomfortable. The prophets repeatedly voiced the heart of the divine. They spoke about that which is holy, that which is sacred. They envisioned what it could be like for everybody to have enough. And that is what we're experiencing, because this feeling, it transcends our individualism, which is what I started this thing off. It shines a spotlight on how we're naturally supposed to be in sync with one another. When somebody's in great agony, we feel it. When a people are in great pain, we react. And I believe that's what we're witnessing. There's a line in verse 21 of Isaiah that says, "While they crawl away into caverns and hide among the jagged rocks and the cliffs, they will try to escape the terror of the Lord and the glory of his majesty as he rises to shake the earth." Like, whew, you feel that? It's like a Christopher Nolan scene, you know, like the earth shaking from God's terror. You feel the power in that verse because it's arresting. And I think the thing that leaves me hopeful is knowing that this injustice will not go on for everybody forever. It's not just a small minority, a voiceless minority that's upset anymore. There seems to be this growing, maybe we shouldn't do that again. Or, maybe it's beyond like, oh, I just had a little bit of a momentary slip there. Like, this is something bigger. And the prophets, as usual, have no problem naming it. They say it's like a shaking of the earth. It's an awareness that something deeply rooted, deeply entrenched in the heart of God has been agitated, and he's not going to take it much longer. And the earth is going to shake when he reacts. That's the legacy that the ancient prophets have left for us. You know, there's a moment in the following chapter where the divine comments that it's you who have ruined my vineyard. It's as if the divine is saying, some of you that have been overseeing this vineyard I told you to steward, you've done a terrible job. You've been horrible people. You've ruined my vineyard. You've been terrible managers. You've treated people terribly. You've managed in a way that is opposite of the way I intended, where everybody has enough. And I'm coming back because I'm fixing this. I'm not going to take it anymore. Not for my people. Right? This is good news. And there's something I think that's happening that is attacking our American individualism, which is what I started off saying. There's a serious issue of what is our individual rights, and then there's also a communal ownership. So saying things like, well, it's not my problem, let somebody else fix it. Like, that's not how the people who follow Jesus react. Well, I never owned slaves. That was a different time, different. No, this isn't individual anymore. There has to be a communal, a corporate awareness that we have violated the way God intended things to be, and he's giving us the opportunity to restore that to that's what's broken. Comments like, not my problem, or I didn't do it, or this is my truth. We got to stop talking like that, because what we're seeing now rise up is this communal, this is our truth. We are coming to recognize that this is not the way it's supposed to be. We have to put our efforts into restoring the brokenness. We have to be the voice for those who have not had a voice for so long. And we're feeling this type of truth that has the power to shake the earth. And this is such an exciting time to follow Jesus. And it's not, you know, following Jesus is not this like therapeutic, moralistic deism, which is like, God just wants you to have really nice things and be happy and not too much stress. The call to follow Jesus is intense. And he says, leave your families. Leave, you know that family business that you'd probably make your dad proud if you carried that on? Yeah, you're going to have to leave that to follow me. And that's the call. This is a hard thing. And what we're seeing is the action of people, I think, around us who long for a better earth. The prophets are rising up. And my hope is that we develop as Christians our prophetic voice, and that when we see something that's slightly off, or injustice being done, or people being oppressed or mistreated wrongly while others are eating their filet mignons, that we as a people of God go, no, 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 we're not doing this anymore. Don't you want to be part of the revolution that leads us into this wild imagination of what could be? I do, and I think that's going to start by us calling out the very things that we see wrong with the way things are currently done. That is our call. And so I want to just take a second. And maybe we just sit here for a second in stillness and quietness and think that maybe that the Spirit will convict us. The Holy Spirit is the convictor of sins. And so maybe He has, if we just close our eyes and open up our hearts and our minds to hearing the Spirit, maybe leave us with some sort of truth for today or some sort of word for today. Maybe it's a time for us to confess ignorance, confess our own sins, confess our own prejudices, maybe it's time for us to confess something that we've done in the past or seen in the past that has stuck with us where we should have acted differently. And I think the Spirit wants to give you freedom there, that the new day is coming where we get to be the voices that rise up and give voice to those who don't have it. We get to use the privilege that's been granted to us to be able to speak for the voiceless.